Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
You are now tuned into anything potable, the most honorable, the most audible. Hold the applause, like Paul Pierce when he was fresh out the hospital, like Antoine when he shimmied after shots went through. So tell me why you mad even, your team gonna be sad leaving after matching up with Brad Stevens. Gang green, it's no other way, so tune in to the pod if you plan on staying up to date. You heard? Aziz. AJ, I see you, man.
She.
Welcome to
Atlantic Panama, the Boston Celtics podcast here on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm your host, Sam Jam Packard, and I am joined, as always, by the kid, the god, the legend himself, Celtics beat reporter from The Athletic, Jay King, ladies and gentlemen. And we are coming to you after the Celtics first loss of the season. It is a preseason game. They lost to the Orlando Magic. They had none of their best guys. But before we get into that, I need to tell you that this podcast is brought to you by DirecTV Stream. You can get your TV with the best of live and on demand by going to directtv.com. All right, Jay, the Celtics are no longer undefeated, but I guess the bigger news of the day, the surprise news of the day, the news that forced little Jay King have to do a little journalism, track down some leads. Marcus Smart has been suspended for the final game of the season because he missed the team flight to Orlando. So says Watch.
That's interesting. Not what I expected from this Thursday afternoon. I thought it'd be a quiet day. I thought we'd be discussing Aaron Nesmith and Peyton Pritchard. Maybe
we'll get to them.
Maybe a little Theo Pinson. Instead, Marcus Smart suspended before Ime Udoka could even coach a single regular season game. It's just a preseason suspension. He'll be back in time for opening night, but obviously not what you want this early in the Udoka tenure.
No, I got to say, it's a good thing. He laid down the law. A rule was broken, and he held Marcus Smart accountable for breaking the rule. I think it just shows a strong start to the Ime era in that he's not going to take no garbage, even from the heart and the soul of the team. It's what accountability is. It's a good culture. Brad Stevens would have let him walk. Brad Stevens wouldn't have punished him at all.
No, the spin zone from Packer. The spin zone from Packer. It's a great thing that Marcus Smart has been suspended.
He broke a rule. He missed a flight, and he's been suspended for it. I mean, that's what accountability is. Ime said it was a rule he set up day one when he showed up. Marcus tried to test the limits, as is his right. And you know what? It's getting slapped on the wrist. It's proportional to the crime, and I think it's justice. Justice has been served by Ime. Court can move on to the next case.
So obviously, it's not the biggest deal. Smart has been in some rocky moments with the Celtics before. He always seems to redeem himself and then some. Like, you kind of almost expect one or two Marcus Smart moments going into a season. And he'll get disciplined. He'll get whatever, like something will happen and then the sellers just move on because just kind of part of the Marcus Smart experience. But this early in the Udoka tenure, I think you wonder, like, are they cool? Are they cool with each other? Like, is Marcus Smart...
Do you think Marcus did it just to spite Udoka? Just to, like,
no, but I'm them? Saying, it like, is Marcus Smart mad that he got held accountable like this? Is he frustrated that the Celtics suspended him and presumably docked him a paycheck from a preseason game? Is he...
There like, goes the media like, just trying to drum up controversy.
I'm just saying, I'm not drumming up controversy. It's obviously not the biggest deal. But you do wonder. And then you also wonder, like, how fed
do
up
you are wonder? They? Do you wonder? Do how you actually up? Think that Ime yeah. and Marcus Smart have beef? Like,
no, I'm just Marcus saying. Like, pissed off? When you get suspended 2 weeks into a guy's coaching tenure.
You don't think Ime like, has enough
there are certainly to questions to be asked about where those guys are in their relationship and where they go next from that.
I think Marcus was testing Ime and said, you better suspend me to show that there are rules on this team and everyone else has to be held accountable from the top of the team, from the heart and the soul on down. I think this was planned.
I saw someone on Twitter say that this was an organizational plan.
This is a false flag operation.
For Smart to do this so that everyone else saw, like, okay, if Marcus Smart can get held accountable like this, then you better get your ass to that team.
Well, play. Ime said in his press conference that it was a rule he had from day one. And if that's the case, that it's like, if you miss something, you're going to be punished for it. And then Marcus misses the team playing. Like, I don't think Marcus should, there's any, a rational person wouldn't be that upset from receiving a punishment from breaking a rule from day one. And I don't think like it matters that it's only Ime's first couple of weeks. Like, as soon as he got the head coaching job, he has the ability to suspend people. It's his team. It's his rules. Like, if he's just going to make rules and not enforce them, then he's like a weak guy. And everything we've heard about Ime is like, he's going to hold you accountable. So I think it's a great thing for justice to be upheld. The punishment has fit the crime. And I think the Celtics are stronger for it moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good.
Nothing. That's
the optimistic take. I mean, and there could be something to that. This could be Udoka coming in and establishing the tone that shit's not going to slide these days. Like, if you screw up, you're going to be punished for it. The Celtics are not going to put up with shit anymore.
When's the last time Brad Stevens was suspending someone and the players walked all over him? You need to show a tough backbone if you're the head coach.
Didn't he suspend Smart for missing a shoot-around before a preseason game one time? Like, this is not the first time.
I don't know. You tell me. I'm not speaking with facts on my side here. I'm just yelling.
Yeah. I think Jared Sullinger got suspended once for showing up late to practice. Robert Williams was held accountable when he missed a couple of things.
Oh, so it sounds like an institutional rule that Marcus Smart should have known and that his suspension is, again, not a big deal. Everything comes back to this just not being a big deal.
I'm just saying that, like,
you're just the mainstream media just trying to drum up controversy to push a narrative. Next thing you're going to tell me is that Jalen and Jason don't play Boggle together on road trips. I mean, it's just classic stories from you guys.
Boggle's a shit game anyway.
That's a very good point. But you know what? I'm positive. I'm feeling good about this team with, I think, good reason, because it's just been fun to watch them in the preseason so far.
Nothing can kill the vibes.
The vibes have been great so far. You have the guys fighting in practice. Like, that's always a good, fun preseason story. It didn't sound like a bad fight. It just sounded like a very competitive fight. And then two interesting preseason games. I thought the Raptors game, there's just good. Like, we saw the first kind of evidence of Horford and Rob Williams playing together. And too big lineup, not to be feared, says Udoka.
For opponents to fear, perhaps.
Perhaps. With the passing that they had, it did look good with the kind of spacing and passing that those two guys provided when they were on the court together at the same time.
Yeah, and I think you got to see a little bit of how the Celtics want to play. Like having Tatum force double teams and then playing off that. I thought – in that Raptors game, he did an incredible job of passing out of the post, from double teams. And
just like finding guys in the opposite corner, like out of post-ups on the low block. He's just doing stuff like crazy stuff like that.
And I was impressed too. Like he didn't always try to force it. Like he didn't look for his own first a lot of the time. It was like as soon as the extra help defender came, he just gave a quick pass where it needed to go. And that was what was impressive to me about it and what he's going to have to continue to work on and demonstrate throughout this season. So, yeah, the Raptors game, especially when the starting lineup was out there, very impressive. And then, like, the Celtics are going to be big. With that, if they do start Horford at the four, which I'm pretty sure they want to do, they're going to be huge. Like, they're big at every position. Smart's a huge point guard. Tatum and Brown are big twos and threes. Horford at the four is bigger than most guys there, and Robert Williams more athletic than anyone at the center, basically. So it's funny, like the only guy you wouldn't post up in that group is probably Robert Williams, the center, right? Like, I mean, he'll get a couple once in a while, but everyone else is kind of a post-up threat. And I think because they'll have so much size and because a lot of those guys can be good passers out of the post, like that could be a tool that they use pretty well this year. The Magic game was probably more fun than I anticipated. Theo Pinson is just a crafty dude. I enjoyed the artistic stylings of Theo Pinson.
A lot of Theo Pinson talk. People are wanting Theo Pinson to get that 15th spot. I like our man Cameron Talbot saying the roster vibes are immaculate. Possibly. I don't know if he's going to get that 15th spot, but I think the other reason that the Raptors game and the Magic game have been fun for Celtics fans is just like because if some guys are out of COVID or some guys are not playing or some guys missed a team flight, we're just seeing a lot of the young guys and pretty much every young guy the Celtics has drafted over the past 2 years has shown some moments, shown some flashes. We had Romeo knocking down a number of threes in the Raptors game. Peyton Pritchard has just been very solid in any action he's had. Naismith scored, I think, 24 or 26 points last night. I have Slim Grant knocking down threes, catch and shoot threes. It just seems like all of the young guys have benefited from a full offseason. And I know this is the preseason. We're going to overreact. They're playing the Orlando Magic. But, like, they all seem to be doing some good things out there, at least early on.
Yeah, I think the young guys have all – especially Pritchard, really, to me, like Pritchard's been good. And I think it's like Pritchard shot 41% from three last year. It's obvious he's just a very, very good shooter. And it's obvious he's going to be a floor spacer for everybody else on the roster for a team that needs floor spacing. I want to see whether he and Schroeder can work together. But if they can, I think that's a really interesting duo. If they can hold up defensively, like, Schroeder can get to the paint. Pritchard can space or play off him. And I just think Pritchard in that Magic, that first quarter he played against the Magic was dynamite. After the first few minutes, because the first few minutes were rough for everyone. That was tough to watch.
It started real ugly.
Oh, man. One of the ugliest starts probably of any Celtics game I've ever seen. But from there, you know, Pritchard settled in. He hit a three drifting into the corner. Then he hit a three from the logo, which is a thing for him. Like, he's a logo shooter. They call it four-point plays, four-point range here in Celtics land. But then I just thought the creation that he had off the dribble, you know, when he drove by Cole Anthony and dumped it off to Romeo Langford for a bucket, when he – got out in transition, kept Etuan Moore on his back, and fed Hernan Gomez, who eventually found Naismith.
That was a crazy pass by Hernan Gomez.
And then the two pull-up jumpers Pritchard had, where he kind of took advantage of Etuan Moore going way over the top of ball screens because he feared Pritchard as a shooter. That's the next step for Pritchard, and that's what the Celtics should be excited about, I think, after watching him against Orlando. Now, obviously, broken nose or maybe broken nose, not great, but it probably shouldn't keep him away from the lineup on opening night.
Oh, he's just going to wear a mask and he's going to be fine. But
so, Someone tweeted me, this shouldn't have cracked me up because it's very juvenile. But someone tweeted me masked PP. They call that a condom or something. And it cracked me up.
I mean, that should crack you up. That's a good joke.
Yeah. Masked PP.
But he's earned like a role on this team, it feels like. Like if he doesn't get it minutes in every game, I'd kind of be surprised to see Peyton Pritchard DNPs. He just feels like he's a solid contributor. And given his deep shooting and his range, just something that he has that no one else on the team has, and something that like you're going to want some contribution from him every single night.
Yeah, and I think coming into the training camp, I wasn't sure how Pritchard fit in. And I'm still not entirely sure, like just because of Schroeder fit mostly. But he's played well enough and his shooting is important enough that I think you got to find ways to get him on the court. And then I think, you know, in different ways, Langford and Neesmith have shown some promise too. And Grant, like you said, the young guys have been pretty impressive. And I think that helps transform the Celtics bench. You know, they already have the veterans in Schroeder and Richardson and Cantor, who you know what you're going to get. But if those three young guys, four young guys, can take steps too, then that's a really deep bench with a lot of different types of options. And it will give Udoka a lot of versatility. So I think it's promising what those guys have done so far when they weren't getting swatted by Mo Bamba. Who
from
is the force?
From force, potential all-star Mo Bamba. Okay, what is going to last longer? What do you think is more likely to stay? The three-point shooting from Romeo or the kind of shot creation driving Jaylen Brown style game from Aaron Neesmith? What's more sustainable moving into the season?
Neither of them?
You don't believe either of them is going to last?
Let's go with neither of them. No, but I do think – so Romeo has never been more than like a 20%, 20-something percent three-point shooter, whether it was college, G League, NBA so far.
But everyone knows that when you learn to shoot with a ping pong paddle, it takes at least 5 years to kick in.
I'm just saying I'm going to need more than like small sample size of preseason for him to prove it. Neesmith, his off the dribble game against Orlando was intriguing because he's going to be a good enough shooter where guys are going to have to close out. And if guys close out to him and he can beat them and he can create something and he becomes a dynamic threat off those closeouts, that changes things for him. That changes things for the Celtics. So I'm going Neesmith.
I've never seen a drive from Neesmith that wasn't just like a straight line explode to the rim. I've never seen like a stop pivot like fade. Like that's the first two times I've seen it ever in his career.
And then he had the change of pace move to get by Mo Bamba for a layup. Like he was really doing some things off the bounce. And like you said, like just using actual moves.
Trying stuff.
How many moves did he make last year? Like dribble moves? Not many.
He had one move, and it was not dribbling. It was not having the basketball and then running as fast as he could and jumping and trying to get the offensive rebound. Yeah. I would say I think Neesmith is probably a much more sustainable one because I think he's going to get into the game. His shooting is going to get him into a lot more games, and so he's going to have a lot more opportunities. But the Orlando situation is a unique because how many times is like the Neesmith going to really have the ball? You're going to want Neesmith to basically be the guy who knocks down threes and moves the ball. And yeah, if people close out hard, then be able to drive. But it's going to be interesting. I'm just as surprised as you are with the C. Romeo shooting. The Celtics have been, it's very small sample size, but knocking down a lot of threes. Grant has seemed pretty fluid with him knocking down threes. Again, I don't know how sustainable that is. But the thing that's interesting to me is all of those guys, like the Celtics last year basically asked a lot of those guys to be like, you're going to get significant minutes now. At least for Neesmith, Romeo, and Grant, I think Neesmith probably there's going to be a lot more minutes for him. But they're not asking that much from Romeo and Grant in terms of like solid, consistent minutes. The Celtics are a pretty deep team, and I declared in just my joy of watching them play that they're the deepest team in the league at this point, just because you're putting all four of those young guys on top of Richardson and Schroeder. You basically you're running 11 deep at that point in terms of guys you will trust to put into an NBA game. I don't know a lot of other teams in the league that you can really say that about. I got one good retort on Twitter is like the Atlanta Hawks. But what other team has like a rotation of 11 guys that you think is like, oh, I'm even forgetting Enes Kanter. Enes Kanter, you can count as an official NBA player. That's 12 guys that you would like feel pretty good about them just being in the game. That's a pretty deep team.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, I would put like the Lakers up there as far as guys that are
guys who have played in the NBA before. Yeah, they got a lot of experience out there in LA. Someone said the Nets.
Milwaukee's pretty deep.
Nets have some old guys, but I don't think they're that deep. Milwaukee's pretty deep, but there's not a lot of
pretty deep.
The Suns are not deep. Who's the Suns' backup center? Dario Saric.
Yeah, Dario.
Yeah, he got hurt in the finals and it tanked their team. I don't know what the Suns' offseason moves are, but I just think that's a good sign for the Celtics because we're seeing everyone's going to get injured at some point. That's just like how I feel like you are do well in the regular season is you just don't have sustained bad periods of play because of, some of the lineups that you saw ran out last year by the Celtics. And so if any of the young guys can step up and just be, they don't even need to be the sixth man or the seventh man. And it feels like kind of Peyton Pritchard's the eighth man. If Nesmith, Romeo, Grant can be a solid ninth or 10th guy, just a solid role player, then I think the Celtics have kind of found something where depending on matchups, depending on kind of who plays well together, they're just not going to have moments of just terrible basketball, which I feels like has plagued them, especially last year.
Are you worried that they could have a slow start because like now 3/5 of their starting lineup will miss preseason time and they've got a new coach and I think 7 of their first 10 games are on the road and like
I wasn't worried about it until you brought it up, but yeah, we should talk about it. Jaylen Brown out with COVID, but I think he is asymptomatic and they think he should be back by the first game of the season. Al Horford also out. I think it takes 10 days for them to be in quarantine. So I think that puts Al out at least for the opening night against the Knicks.
Yeah, Udoka said it would be like very close for Al, whether he'll be able to get back for the Knicks. So I don't know what the exact timeline was. He made it seem like it was Sunday that Horford tested positive the day before the Celtics flew to Orlando. So it's like very close. I don't know if the time you test positive, like, is it 24 hours as a full day? Is it just like the next day at some time? I'm not entirely certain on that, but I would guess Al Horford will probably miss at least the first game based on what happened with the Celtics last season. At least the guys didn't just come back when they were supposed to come back. It normally was like, they got a couple of days of practice, get their conditioning right, get their lungs better.
And then
ease their way back into it once they were cleared to play.
And I have no idea if like having the vaccine will change your response and make it like so your conditioning maybe is less affected. Like Fournier last year, he just missed his time and it didn't seem like he was that symptomatic, but then like bright lights still upset him. And so actually, I would not describe him as asymptomatic, and because bright lights is a major symptom.
Symptomatic, yeah.
But it feels – I don't know how that changes. But the question is, like, does that have a big impact on how well the team plays starting out? I have no idea. According to Ime, we know what we have in Jaylen Brown, and we know what we have in Al Horford.
That's his new line.
That's his go-to. Name something he said more often in his time as Celtics head coach. That's his go-to line when asked about any player.
We know what we have in Ime Udoka.
We have a coach who knows what he has. But like, I don't know. I think it could, yeah. sure, they could drop that first game against the Knicks because Jalen's not in the best condition in Horford. I just have no idea how to kind of react to that. I think they could, but I still think that, like, because they have these other guys and Jason Tatum still exists, it's not going to be like, oh, they're going to be underdogs in their first, like, four or five games.
Yeah, I just think, like, from a standpoint of implementing a new system and learning a new system and adapting to what is texturally, is that even a word?
Are you talking about the texture?
Yeah.
Texturally?
I don't know if that's a word.
Most texture-like.
Texturally, it's a very different type of roster. And so I think there's a lot for the Celtics to kind of adjust to. And
what's the biggest adjustment?
Some of their most important pieces now are missing time when they – the biggest adjustment is new coach, like new system, new philosophies. Udoka said he's going to kind of slow down the implementation of things while Brown and Horford are away from the team, so they're not going to be as advanced as they want to on that front. Then I think, like, we saw especially the first preseason game, all Udoka did was just have them switch. And he said that was basically what he did for the first week or so of training camp. And then Jalen and Horford haven't really practiced since then. So, like, what happens with the other defensive strategies they're implementing? I just think, like, it's not the biggest deal again, but it's disruptive in what's kind of a pretty important training camp with a new coach coming in and establishing, you know, his new ways. So we'll see. We will see how much it impacts them. We will see how impacted they are by this. Not the biggest deal, but it's not like it's tough luck to have Brown and Horford go out, and then it's just bad mistake for Smart to get suspended so early.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest adjustment has been, like, the new defensive tactics, but it's like, it's just very hard to project because we've only really seen them in that Raptors game, and then even Jay, like, we saw them, what, for 20 minutes at full strength in the very first preseason game. What are the things that have stood out to you about, like, kind of what we've seen from them early in the preseason? I mean, we've only seen one game from Dennis Schroeder. Robert Williams started knocking down his mid-range shots in Orlando and is still kind of flying around doing Robert Williams things. Like, it's hard to get a huge read on kind of what's happened in the preseason so far, other than just, like, Peyton Pritchard's been good, and that's been fun.
Yeah. Like, we haven't really gotten a look at the full bench because Schroeder rested in game three and didn't play in game two. We haven't and won't, I guess, get a look at, like, the full rotation because they started Juancho Hernangómez in game one, which isn't going to be what they're going to do. And then they haven't been at full strength since then. So, I mean, we've seen a little bit about kind of how Udoka wants to play. I think he's going to post up more. I think he's going to try to get the Celtics to play faster, especially when their bench is in with Schroeder and Richardson. But, like, we haven't, with the exception of, like, a little burst against the Raptors, and Jaylen Brown didn't play against the Raptors, like, we haven't really seen probably how the Celtics want to play.
Richardson's going to be interesting, just a test case for Celtics fans this year, because I think he's going to be extremely frustrated on offense, and you're going to have just be like, Richardson, what do you do? Like, just do something better on offense. And then he's going to have moments of just, like, excellent defense, and you're just going to have to live with the questionable shot taking or just bad 3-point shot taking from offensive end, and just accept what he gives you on the defensive end. Because I'm basing this off of, like, four possessions in the Raptors series game when he was actually in, where he just doesn't do much for you on offense and then just is, like, a very good on-ball defender.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's, like, he can be pretty frustrating offensively, I think. So he probably will be a good litmus test. The Celtics will have a few litmus test guys. Like, Marcus Smart will be a litmus test, as usual. Al Horford has always been a litmus test guy. Josh Richardson. It's like, what do you value in a basketball player? And your feelings on those guys can differ based on what your answer is.
I will say this about Marcus. And again, this is based on the one game in Toronto. It did feel like he was looking to kind of pass more, and like at least on two occasions that I can remember, passed up open three-pointers to get a better shot. Maybe he takes on more of like a facilitation role, because knowing that he is like the main point guard and not just kind of like a guy off ball looking to knock down shots. Again, very small sample size.
I think that's usually been his like normal setting. So everyone remembers when he goes crazy, right? Everyone remembers like the loud threes, but
it doesn't happen every game.
When the Celtics are going right, and especially when they have a deeper roster, he typically like takes a back seat, and he's a guy who will look for the extra pass. He'll do all the right stuff. Like he led the Celtics in assists last year. His usage rate has typically been pretty low. I think the year when they were like really loaded with Kyrie and Gordon Hayward and all those guys, like his usage rate kind of plummeted, and he was looking to facilitate and do all that stuff. So I think at point guard on a team that probably has more talent than it had last year, I think all that bodes well to Smart feeding into some of his better habits. And I say that after he just got suspended. So.
On court habits.
We'll see. Yeah. But yeah, I don't think that should be like a big issue for the Celtics. Obviously, like it can be helpful to have a bucket getting point guard. But I think like down the stretch, they'll just run everything through Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and or Al Horford. And so it won't hurt them too much to have Smart at point guard. And I think defensively it could really help them. Especially if that big starting lineup works defensively, they're just going to be so big and pretty athletic too with Smart and Tatum and Brown and Robert Williams. Like Al Horford can still move. He's looked great during preseason. Before he got COVID,
he has the bounce.
Yeah. He's looked great. So I think preseason for the most part, like, all the individual stuff has looked pretty good, I think. But you do wonder, like, how much the COVID cases and now Smart suspension kind of set back the Celtics as they try to continue adjusting to Udoka's teaching.
Yeah, how much of the fact, like, they are really turning the ball over. Is that just randomly because they're just – it's a new season and that's what happens? Or is that, like, indicative of their decision-making as a team? It's hard to really tell.
And then you wonder, too, like, how many of the strengths from the Stevens era will carry over? Like he was always a great defense with the exception of last year. Like almost all of his teams were great at defense.
And guarding the 3-point line specifically.
Yeah. And his teams always took care of the ball. Like one of the biggest things is they always had a low turnover rate. And some of that of course was just having Isaiah Thomas and having Kyrie Irving and having Kemba Walker. But you wonder how much of that was the coach and his philosophies and how much will change under a new coach. So, yeah, I do wonder, like, how much of that will translate because some of the players are the same versus how much of it will change because they're just doing different things now.
Now it's time for your favorite part of the podcast.
Is this prediction? Prediction?
It's not a prediction. That's going to come later. Who gets the 15th roster spot, Jay King? And bonus question, who gets that second two-way? Because we got a competition. We got the vibes of Pinson, Jabari Parker going off, the sweet shooting of Garrison Matthews, the other guy whose name I'm forgetting right now, who played a little bit, who everyone says is going to get the second two-way spot. What's his name? Where's number 40? You don't even know.
Who's number 40?
I don't know. The guy who played last night who I didn't recognize.
Juwan Morgan?
Yeah, so you got to get the second two.
I didn't know what number he was, but I do recognize him.
If you had, okay, I guess I will ask you to make a prediction. Predict, Jay King, who is Brad Stevens going to keep for that 15th roster spot?
My prediction is that they'll find a way to move Bruno Fernando.
No!
And keep Jabari Parker and add Garrison Matthews to the roster. That's just my prediction. Like that. That is not very sourced at all. That's just
not very sourced, but somewhat sourced. Oh,
there's very little sourcing. Do not overreact.
He didn't say, folks, he didn't say there's zero sourcing there. He said there's very little sourcing there.
That's just
words are important, Jay. I'm 6 weeks into law school, so now it gives me the right to be an asshole.
Udoka said outright, like, shooting will be important for that final spot. Garrison Matthews can shoot. Garrison Matthews is a shooter. And
Garrison Matthews looks exactly like a guy who's very frustrating to play pickup against, exactly because he's just very good at knocking down threes. And he's just got a frustrating white guy face, and I don't know what else, like, he's just type one of those type of players.
Tell me I'm wrong.
All right. That's fair. Agree to disagree. They were both gunning. Him and Jabari were gunning for that 15th spot. They both came out aggressive against the Magic. Worked out a little bit more for Jabari, but Matthews did show he could knock down shots.
He really came in firing.
That makes sense. Like, if he's going to make the team, it's going to be because he's the guy who knocks down threes. You're right that I kind of like your prediction, because right now Fernando serves no role. Maybe you want another center if you're going to go double bigs, and then that means, like, you're going to need a backup center, because that's the one downside.
Grant Williams can play center. Like, what would really
– what if Cantor gets hurt? What if
it would take a lot, I think, for them to have to lean on Bruno Fernando much this season.
The only situation is I see Cantor gets hurt, and then you're still, like, having a lot of success with the Horford-Rob – starting lineup, and you need just some other backup center minutes from a large man. Like, that's the only way I can see Bruno Fernando having a role. So is they, like, how much money is Fernando owed? Do you think they would just cut him outright, or, like, try to trade him for a second round top 55 protected pick, something like that?
Try to trade him and then open up that roster spot. Just so Jabari, obviously he's not guaranteed. Just from what Ime said about him, kind of saying, you know, we know what we have with him.
We know what we have in him.
We'll get a bucket.
A roster spot. That's what we have.
It can be nice for a team to have a guy that can just go get a bucket. And Jabari just has a nose for buckets. He smells buckets. He hunts down buckets. He keeps looking for buckets, no matter the situation. And he's pretty good at getting them, no matter the situation. So there are other flaws there, but from, like, a 15th spot guy, whatever.
Yeah, so
we'll see. But that's just my theory, my working theory at the moment.
No love for the Vibe King himself, Theo Pinson. Maybe give him the second two way. How many years is there restrictions on the two way? Like, could you give the two way to anyone? Like, could the Heat give Udonis Haslem a two way?
No. I think you have to have 4 years or fewer of NBA experience.
Shame for Theo Pinson. I don't think he's gonna. The Vibe Master himself is not gonna be staying here long.
Theo, he has been a Vibe Master.
Really? This is only his fourth year in the league. Maybe he could get the 2A. It doesn't make sense for him. The Maine Celtics might be decent this year. They're making their triumphant return, but. Yeah, it feels like Jabari, like, they're going to want to keep around. Like, Matthews, I feel like, played legitimate minutes for the Wizards last year. It would be weird for him to kind of just not be on an NBA roster after that. I can't say the same for Fernando, as much as I like just this. It's a strong name, Bruno Fernando. It doesn't make sense for him to kind of stick on the team. You win this one, Jay. It was a good prediction. See, why are you so scared of predictions when you just it's a solid, well-thought-out thought exercise?
Those predictions, man.
All right, let's predict one more prediction.
Ooh, another one.
Where do the Celtics finish in the Eastern Conference this year?
Fourth. Fourth.
Seems reasonable.
I think Brooklyn, Milwaukee will be the best regular season team. Brooklyn will be second or third. Philly is just an X factor. Because is Ben Simmons going to be there? Is he not?
He is. He's going to show up unannounced.
Is he going to actually play? Is he going to force his way out?
What did you think about him showing up unannounced to Sixers game and just knocking on the front door of the Wells Fargo Center saying, I'm here for my COVID test? Brilliant move, in my opinion. That's just that's how you play hardball, is you just you put it in the other guy's court and just saying, I'm here now. Wild move by Ben Simmons.
Love that move.
Do you think there's just like a staffer who had to open the door and then like text someone? Or do you think he just truly showed up and was like, it's me, Ben Simmons. Have you heard of me?
I think people have heard of Ben Simmons. He probably got booed when he showed up.
That's the thing. I think Ben Simmons is going to play his best when the Philly crowd hates him, because the entire spite is when what finally motivates him to no longer be a coward is when he's just playing with pure rage and Philly fans throwing batteries.
Yeah, he's always been good when the pressure is the highest.
No, that's now it's positive expectations. That's what ruined him before. He wanted everyone to like him. Now that he knows everyone hates him, he can stop worrying and finally get to shooting the basketball.
I guess. What if he just shoots to spite them and then ends up being pretty good at it? Like, he's like, yeah, you guys want me to fucking play? Well, I'm just going to shoot a fucking three every time.
That's what I'm saying.
We'll see. I don't think that's how it'll go, but.
All right. I'm going to do a surprise pivot for you right now and do the first annual, not even annual, the first time ever. It's going to be the Red Sox minute here on Anything Is Potable. You were at the Red Sox game where they beat the Yankees. I was at the Red Sox game when they beat the Yankees. Two great walk-off wins against the Rays, just putting down division rivals left and right.
I was at the walk-off game too.
Which walk-off? There was two of them, baby.
The closeout.
Yeah, you're at multiple
games. They call me Kid Closeout.
Give me your Red Sox thoughts. What are your chances in the ALCS?
I mean, it depends on if the kid shows up, and the kid has plans. Tickets. The kid has plans to go to Game 3.
Ooh, maybe so another walk-off.
Game 3 could be a dub.
I'm a big Xander Bogaerts guy, and I'm a big Rafael Devers guy, and I like to see them sock dingers. Big dingers guy. That's been fun, too. Nathan Eovaldi, he's cool with me, too.
Fenway was electric.
Did you notice just, like, way too many Yankees fans at that game, though? Just, like
– No, I love that. I love that because there was a lot of shit-talking going on, at least in my section. So I was a fan of that.
There was a lot of shit talking
about it. Adds to the vibe when people are legit hostile in the stands.
I was just like thought like it was way more than I was like used to. Normally, I felt like in games like that, you would not see as many people proudly wearing Yankees jerseys. At least back in my day, I'm pulling a back in my day card when there was Yankee suck jerseys everywhere and there's a fight at every Red Sox Yankees game. You wouldn't wear a Yankees jersey to Fenway Park, and like you wouldn't wear a Red Sox jersey to Yankee Stadium. There's no fear, not enough fear of public violence these days.
I mean, is that something that should be a fear?
I thought that's what baseball is all about.
Yeah, I guess kind of. That's why people fear the beanballs.
Back in my day, Pedro Martinez threw Don Zimmer down on the ground, and I was in standing room only all the way in center field, in the farthest back seats you can get, standing under the Jumbotron, and we saw someone just fall down, and I distinctly remember someone yelling, Ortiz just threw a bat. And so that's how I first thought that happened, and then it just turned out Pedro Martinez kind of
overrated. Pedro Martinez tossed an old guy.
Just tossed an old guy to the ground, which is much better than throwing a bat. That was a wonderful fan experience for me. The old standing room way back in center field. You know what's a weird fan experience, Jay? Is on Friday or Saturday night, I went to the Celtics-Raptors game, right? And you know what? I accept my position as being less than on the kind of rungs of Celtics media. I'm not going to get the front row seats up next to the Boston Globe. I'm not going to get down there. So I'm going to be on level 9. Makes sense to me. I have no complaints there. But I was the only guy on level 9 for the Celtics preseason game.
They gave you your whole section.
It was weird, though. Like, have you ever been at a game that where there's, like, over 15,000 people there and then also feel like you're alone at the same time? It was kind of bizarre. Just I'm not complaining about it. I just wanted to register for the record that it was weird. I, like, turned to people. There was no one there to turn to. It was just very, very bizarre.
I'm glad you survived.
Thank you. How about that new Jumbotron, eh? Pretty big.
I did notice that there was a new Jumbotron.
Oh, yeah. It's new. Way bigger.
More jumbo.
And I'm just trying to think of all the other observations from my return to the TD Garden. Lucky is back, but no more JetBlue flight crew, at least at this point in the season.
That's your thoughts? Unlucky, I would say.
I would say. Any other thoughts from – I want to empty the J. King drunk drawer as well, give you an opportunity. Any other observations from the last two Celtics preseason games? Things that you really were talking about. I mentioned it earlier in passing, but Juancho Hernangómez with a great kind of turning pass to find Nesmith in the corner. Matthews slapping Rob Williams in the face, and then Rob Williams just like hands on his knees looking down like throughout the entire free throw. That was kind of scary, but ended up being kind of funny. But that's about it. That's all I got from the
Robert Williams here. Hustling. Wow. Ooh, he was hustling. That one play he made where somebody said he like cut in front of a guy in the full court, stole it, and found Nesmith for a bucket. Not a play you see a lot of centers make. And it's been really interesting to see Robert Williams evolve into someone who's in good shape and can hustle and does hustle a lot. He's growing. He keeps growing.
I forgot about this. We did get some listener questions. I feel like we touched on a lot of them, especially the double bigs, young guys playing, what to expect from the 15th roster spot. But there was a question from Eli Braginski saying that Jay obviously beat me in one-on-one, but what's something I'm 100% sure I could beat Jay in?
There's not a goddamn thing.
That's just so false.
Only law trivia. That's all you got.
Law trivia is a pretty good one. I think I could beat you in chess. Settlers of Catan.
No chance.
Oh, now we got to play chess. You want chess? You want to play, chess boxing where you fight around and then you play a game of chess and then you fight around? We won't fight. We'll just play.
That was a thing.
We'll play pickup where we'll have to play chess in between each point.
I mean, I would.
That's a battle of mind and body and spirit.
Academic decathlon, and I would whip your ass.
Yeah, if it was business ethics. Jay, I think in an academic decathlon, I would win. And in most athletic feats, you would win.
Nib high football rule.
I'm a
smart motherfucker, man.
I'm not doubting that. I just think I'm smarter.
You may be more learned.
But it depends on street smarts or not. Is the Industrial Revolution potable?
It sure fucking is.
And it is potable! Oh, man.
The puppy who lost his way.
Yeah. See, society is the man.